Well, we're here today with Professor Ken Miller. Why you felt the desire to write the Brown Daily Herald post in response to Raymond Kelly's speech?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think the biggest reason is I'm deeply committed to the notion that universities are the coolest places on the planet. They're great places to be. I've spent my adult life at university communities here and elsewhere, and I think the university is a very special place. And it's a very special place, not just because you have a whole bunch of smart people there, but it's a special place because it promotes the interchange and exchange and testing and generation of new ideas. And that's certainly true in the scientific field, where people doing research are trying to do that all the time. But it's also true in the humanities and the social sciences. And the exchange of ideas, and I would underline the free exchange of ideas, is, I think, the essence of what a university is all about. So here's the reason I felt strongly about the Kelly incident. Vigorous protest is very much in the tradition of universities, including this university. And on the day of the demonstration, believe it or not, I was actually driving home a little bit early from work, and I drove past the List Art Building, and I saw a crowd outside, and I saw picket signs and demonstrators, and I thought, that's terrific, because Kelly's a controversial guy, so he'll certainly know that there's a lot of people here who disagree with him. But what happened, of course, is that he was heckled and shouted down to the point where the lecture was canceled, where he was unable to speak. And from my way of looking at things, any time a group on campus takes it upon themselves to decide what other people cannot hear, that's a suppression of the openness upon which the university depends. And even though it's not my field, I think it's of general interest to every citizen of the university. And it's also in the general interest of the very people who shouted Kelly down that this not happen to other speakers, speakers with whom they might agree and suddenly discover that other students want to shout them down or shut down a lecture.
And how has the community response been to your piece? Were you surprised by some of the reactions?
Well, I was surprised at how intense the reaction was. I think the piece I wrote, the BDH, has generated like 150 or 160 comments. And since the average op-ed piece in the BDH generates somewhere between zero and one comment, I was sort of surprised by that. If you look carefully, you'll discover that most of those comments are pretty positive. The other thing I should tell you is I've gotten a slew of email from an awful lot of alumni who read the BDH, as it turns out, students on campus, some of whom I knew, some of whom I didn't, and a lot of people from outside the university with no connection whatsoever. All but one of those have been overwhelmingly positive. And this includes, by the way, invitations from various journals and other publications to write editorials for them. The Huffington Post called me up and asked me if they could run that article in the Huffington Post, which they did, and it's generated several hundred comments as well. So overall, I've been very pleased by the reaction. It's been generally positive. The other thing I should mention, in line with this, is that I was absolutely delighted with the most recent letter that President Paxson wrote to the university community. And it convinces me that President Paxson is someone who feels as I do, and I think as the majority of students and faculty and staff on this campus do, which is that this university has to be open to all opinions, including those of people who are pretty controversial, like Kelly.
How has the conversation been with the faculty? Do you think your view is the one that a lot of the faculty hold as well?
Well, I have to tell you that I'm on sabbatical leave this year. I missed the faculty meeting at which President Paxson brought this up. My own understanding is that most of the faculty spoke in support of the notion that this was unacceptable behavior. And, of course, the Brown Daily Herald conducted a poll of students, and if I remember the percentages in which they asked students, do you approve or disapprove the actions of the protesters in disrupting the speech, only about 15% approved and about 75% disapproved. So the margin of opinion against the disruptors among the student body was 5-1 against, and that's pretty substantial.
Great. Let's hear more about your sabbatical. What are you doing right now? What are you researching, interested in?
Well, my research over the years has been on cell membrane structure and organization. I'm basically a structural biologist, and I use the electron microscope to try to tease apart the organization of biological membranes and proteins inside of them. And my lab has been sort of puttering around over the last couple of years, trying to figure out a good way to work out the structural biology of plasmodesmata. Plasmodesmata are channels that connect plant cells in a higher plant. And the reason they're important is because, unlike animals, in a plant, the cells are literally walled off from each other because there's a cellulose cell wall that surrounds them. So without connections between those cells, a plant would basically just be a collection of cells, and it wouldn't be able to function as a unified organism. These connections allow literally messages to flow from one cell to another, and they control the development of the plant. They allow, among other things, virus particles, actually, in an infection to pass from one cell to another. And we really don't understand how they open, how they close, what governs their production, or how they actually function. So that's I've been trying to find exactly the right system to try to answer those questions. More recently, I feel almost like I've been chained to the keyboard, because I'm the co-author of a whole series of high school biology textbooks that are used all over the country. If you write an unsuccessful textbook, you might say that's a great thing. You write it and then you're all done. But if you write a successful textbook, especially in a fast-moving science like biology, you have to keep rewriting it and rewriting it and rewriting it. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing during this sabbatical year, and I am doing, is trying to do a complete rewrite of our textbook to fit in with what are known as the next generation science standards, a new set of national science standards that most of the states have adopted. I've also written two books for popular audiences. They've both been about evolution. One is called Finding Darwin's God, and I guess you could say it's a lot about evolution and religion. The other one is called Only a Theory, and that's a lot about the political movements for and against the teaching of evolution and other controversial sciences in our schools. The trade book that I'm working on now is a book on human evolution and various aspects of it and how we understand ourselves as organisms that have an evolutionary history. And I hope very much to have all of my drafts of the chapters of that book finished by the end of the sabbatical year.
And our final question, we are coming up to Brown's 250th anniversary this year, and a university for almost 30 years. How has the university, in your opinion, changed?
Well, there's a couple interesting things, and I'll talk about architecturally first. The old campus, the main green, between Faunce House and the flagpole, between Sales Hall and University Hall, looks almost exactly the same as it did the first time I saw this campus, and that's the year I was a high school senior, and that was 1965. So Brown has really preserved a lot of the traditional parts of the campus. But the first change that anybody who knew it back then realizes is that Brown has gotten, like, way bigger. Bryant University, which is now in Smithfield, Rhode Island, used to be right next to Brown. What we call the East Campus was actually the campus of Bryant College at the time. And Brown purchased that, I believe, in 72 or 73 and expanded in that direction. So that increased the geographic footprint of the university. Of course, in the meantime, we've also built a medical school. We built extraordinary new buildings on campus. And when alumni from my class years come back, the first thing that they remark on are the profusion of new and really quite striking buildings on campus, the expansion downtown of the medical school into the jewelry district, and that sort of thing. The other thing is, and boy, does this strike me right away, I was a student athlete in college. I was a varsity swimmer, and I also played water polo. The athletic facilities, which are still not top-notch, but the athletic facilities have really gotten much, much better. And this includes, you know, the aquatic sports that are close to my heart, but also facilities like the Inter-Athletic Building and the Pizzatola and other things. And that's since we have such a high proportion of our students who are, in fact, student-athletes. Some varsity, many recreational. I think that's a big plus for the campus. And then finally, the number of students has gone up. There were just over 3,000 students at Brown when I was a student here. And as you know, we've just about doubled in that respect. And the demography of the student body has changed as well. Men outnumbered women by more than 3-1 when I was an undergrad. And now, as you realize, it's 50-50, or there's a slight majority in favor of women. The other thing is the ethnic composition of the student body has changed dramatically. And I like to joke by saying, and it's true, by the way, that I know, on a first-name basis, every single African-American student in my class, the class of 1970, all four of them. And the change in that respect is absolutely astonishing, and it's very much for the better.
Do you think the core of the students that were back in 1965 and today are still the same?
No, I think the core has changed quite a bit. Brown was much more of a regional college, university. Brown, of course, did draw people from out west and a few foreign students and that sort of thing. Brown is very much more a national university today that draws students from nearly all of the 50 states. And it's also much, much more an international university. I believe we're about 9% foreign students in the undergraduate body. There were only a handful of international students in my class, and that's been a big change. So Brown has become academically more prominent. The demography has changed a great deal. And again, I think that's very much for the better.
Great. Well, thank you for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.